This evening we want to conclude what we've been studying in the book of Proverbs with the subject of better than or comparatively speaking. When it uses these different things to compare a particular truth, it doesn't mean that all the time that one of the things is bad and one of the things is good. It's just simply saying that given a certain circumstance, it is better for this or that to occur or for you to do this or that. And it has a lot to do with just life as it is. The wisdom literature sometimes comes very frankly from the human experience. And sometimes it comes by divine revelation. And by that I mean it's something we wouldn't know unless God told it to us or revealed it to us. So some of the things that are in wisdom literature seem to be like old sayings to us. And sometimes we have old sayings in our culture that will pretty well express the same kind of attitude or teaching. This evening we'll be looking at Proverbs 25:7 and Proverbs 27:5, Proverbs 27:10, and Proverbs 28:6. Proverbs 25:7. For better it is that it be said unto thee, come up hither, than that thou shouldest be put lower in the presence of the prince whom thine eyes have seen. It's not difficult for us to understand this parable or this particular statement because Jesus spoke a parable in the book of Luke, the 14th chapter, and expanded it. Let's turn there and see how Jesus used this particular statement in order to teach by parable the very same lesson. Luke chapter 14, beginning at verse 7. Luke chapter 14, beginning at verse 7. And he put forth a parable to those which were bidden, when he marked how they chose out the chief room, saying unto them, when thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, sit not down in the highest room, lest a more honorable man than thou be bidden of him. And he that bade thee and him come and say to thee, give this man place, and thou begin with shame to take the lowest room. But when thou art bidden, go and sit down in the lowest room, that when he that bade thee cometh, he may say unto thee, friend, go up higher. Then shalt thou have worship in the presence of them that sit at meat with thee. For whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. And there's the principle, and Jesus enunciated it very plainly. But it was based upon verse 7 of chapter 25. In chapter 25 and verse 7 of Proverbs, you'll notice that thou shouldest be put lower in the presence of the prince whom thine eyes have seen. And this seems to indicate that you would go to a social function and you would go in and pick your place. And while you were sitting there, a very important person would come in, such as the prince. And of course, you know that he would be expected to be seated in the places of distinction. But while he's been seated and you've seen him with your own eyes and you're excited about being in the same room and eating at the same table or involved in the same social function as the prince, yet right before his eyes and his very presence, the person who is giving the party or whatever would come and embarrass you in front of the prince. So not only is your joy really great at having seen the prince with your own eyes, but the humiliation is great because you've been humiliated in the eyes of this person. And this would have been a source of great embarrassment in the Middle East. And it's sort of like getting an invitation to go some social function where a very important person is, and then when you're there, you're going to walk over and speak to him or her, and you stump your toe and spill your punch on them. And even though you got to see them, seeing them is overshadowed by the fact that you embarrassed yourself through something that was done. And that's what the idea is here. You know, it's better to just go in and not get excited about it than it is to go in and maybe claim a higher place than you should and then be humiliated. We've all, I think, sometimes bitten off more than we could chew, and that's just a kind of a colloquial expression as to the consequences of going further than you should, or claiming to be more competent than you really are, or wanting to be higher in the eyes of others than you really are, and then getting embarrassed and humiliated. Then Proverbs 27 and 5, very brief statement. But open rebuke is better than secret love. Open rebuke is better than secret love. And there's a reason. The reason is that it corrects the wrong. It solves the problem. It really gets the job done, to be quite frank with you. Someone who openly and straightforwardly tells us of a problem that we have, it is better for us than to have someone who loves us from a distance and would never in any way run the risk of embarrassing us or humiliating us by in any way correcting us. There are those who say that they love someone too much to correct them, but I think we realize that real love will correct. So the idea is, your friend is your friend when he comes and tells you of your problems that you're not aware of, but the person who simply says they have a problem but I love them too much, or who believe they love too much to ever say anything about it, that it is really not as good for you. Now, initially, the hurt seems to be deeper, and we wish people perhaps wouldn't say things like that to us, but in the long run, and I think we have to consider Proverbs in the circumstance or in the situation of the long run. Now, Proverbs 27 and 10. Proverbs 27 and 10. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, neither go into thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity. For better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off. Why? Well, because good friends who are near us are better than one's own relatives who live in a distant land. The implication is, if you're not living near relatives, then make friends with your neighbors. Because when calamity happens, the friend who is near is able to help you. But trying to get to your neighbor, to your brother's house, who lives at a distance, may be an impossibility. And when you get there, then he may not be able to help. I think he's encouraging people to make friends in your neighborhood, to make friends in the city where you live, rather than simply saying, I've come here to work, or I've come here to live, and I have a lot of friends in the city, or I have a lot of friends in the country, and I don't really care whether I make friends with anybody here or not, because I have my friends at another place. And he's saying that in the time of calamity, your friends who live in a distance are not going to be able to come to your aid and help you. So therefore, cultivate friendships. And you'll notice that they reach further than your own self. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. The idea is not to alienate them, with the idea, if you're fretted with them, I don't need you. I've got my brothers. I've got my relatives. And if I ever need help, I'll ask them. Cultivate friendships and then maintain those friendships, because they're better than kinfolk who cannot come and help. And you say, well, that's just plain common sense, Brother Penn. I know. That's why it's called wisdom literature. It's built on the experiences of people and been articulated by people who probably went through this kind of circumstance. A person said, I'll just move up here for a while. I'm not going to get acquainted with anybody. I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm not going to do anything. I'll just give myself to work. I really don't need any friends. I got a lot of friends at home. Well, that's not a good attitude to have, because you may need friends that are very close to you. Then in Proverbs 28 and 6, better is the poor that walketh in his uprightness than he that is perverse in his ways, though he be rich. Exactly the same circumstance that we've looked at probably three or four other times. Ask ourselves, is it wrong to be rich? And the answer is no. Is it particular contribution to be poor? No. Then what is it? If it's not a difference in rich and poor, what's the difference? Well, the difference is this. If riches have been gotten through perversity, which is twisting and turning things from their intended purpose to another purpose. So if you've befriended someone simply for the purpose of getting something out of them, if you live your life simply cultivating a friendship, not for the sake of friendship, but for the sake of advancement, that if you have twisted and perverted the associations and friendships of life, if a person would come and unite with a church simply to use it as an opportunity to reach more people in some sort of scheme, that it would be far better to stay poor and to maintain one's uprightness than to turn to perverse things or twist things and turn things in order to become rich. And we noticed this morning that in becoming rich, we may then wish for the quietness of home than for that which we've obtained through subterfuge and through living a perverse life. It may not seem to be true, but it is always best to do right. It is always best to have a humble spirit. It is always best to tell the truth. It is always best to be upright. It is always best to make the sacrifice of the moment for the good that will occur in the long run. Don't be short-sighted. Don't live for the immediate. Look at what the consequences will be. Look at what the fruit will be. Rather than short term, think long term. Do it in your business. Do it in your marriage. Do it in your church work. Do it in school work. Think long term. Don't enjoy the immediate fruit that comes from shortcuts. Jesus didn't. You know, the devil offered him the world and the kingdoms of it if Jesus would worship him. And Jesus knew that he was going to get the kingdom eventually, but it would be a longer time, and he would have to do what God wanted, like dying on the cross. Jesus didn't take the shortcut. He didn't take the immediate. He considered the consequences and chose the long run that included honesty and integrity and the will of God. But you say, preacher, I don't know. You think it'll really work? Well, according to the wisdom literature, it will. And I have a strong belief that if God says it is true, and you can trust it.